We've got a breakdown on what is happening with the antitrust lawsuits against Facebook and Google. We're diving in with Sam Tomlinson and looking at the pros and cons of antitrust legislation against big tech. All this on the episode today. Go!
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests.
Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics.
This week's featured guest is Sam Tomlinson, Executive Vice President at Warshofsky. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Well, welcome back to The Edge and part two of our interview with Sam Tomlinson. Just a quick intro to our audience of who Sam is. Sam is the Vice President and Digital Strategy and Analytics over at Warshofsky. He oversees client accounts and is responsible for both the strategic direction and execution of all integrated digital marketing data analytics initiatives. And he has been friends of the show for a while, and we had some great conversations in the year that shall not be mentioned. Talking about some problems in the Google Ads space. And we wanted to bring him back around for part two of our discussion of antitrust, what it is, and really what's happening with Google and Facebook and what the digital marketer should know, because it's going to be affecting them. So welcome back to our second segment, Sam. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So we got started with what is antitrust and what the rigors of archaic laws from 1890 coming to bear regarding certain number of antitrust lawsuits starting to bubble to the surface here for Google, Amazon, Apple is also kind of in the mix in its developer network, as well as Facebook. So we were actually just dovetailing into our previous conversation, our previous segment. We were talking about what's happening from the government's standpoint, that there's so many things that are changing, brand new environments. We can't bring an old law. We literally need to follow in the EU's example of creating new laws, because there is new technology, a new environment, a new ecosystem. We just can't shatter a platform or a company and break it into pieces like they did with Ma Bell. This is just place for that.
Right. I agree with that. I think, you know, my general position is every one of these companies has huge network effects, right? Mm-hmm. And breaking up Google, what do you do if you split off Google and YouTube? Are people going to stop using Google Search because they don't have YouTube anymore?
Nope.
No. People are going to stop publishing videos to YouTube? No. Is YouTube going to open up their own search engine to compete with Google? Right. No. Why? Because it takes a huge investment of resources so that you could be like the ninth most popular search engine and try to get market share. In likewise, Google with YouTube, like Google split from YouTube. So post YouTube, Google isn't going to open up another YouTube, because why?
Right.
How do you compete? You don't. So you just end up in this situation where maybe you have more companies, but like you said, does that actually make anything better? For a user, probably not. It probably actually harms privacy, because that's more companies that have more of your data.
Right.
From an advertiser standpoint, maybe you get some lower rates, but maybe you don't, because each one of these companies now has more overhead. So maybe you do, maybe you don't, but you also have more to manage now too. You're not just managing Google, which now you're now managing Google and YouTube. Before you split up Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, now you're managing Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp.
Right.
So you've gone from having to manage two platforms to managing 5 or 10 or 15. And for a small business, that likely means a really significant expense. So from a breakup standpoint, I don't think you gain anything. I don't think you make the markets more competitive, because these markets, like we talked about in the last section, they have winner-take-all effects. You know, the network effects in these platforms are huge. So, and we saw this most recently, if anybody needs a proof of that, of TikTok.
Right.
TikTok is the fastest platform to ever get to 1 billion users. You know, a year ago, we were talking about, oh, it's like 300 million. That's kind of interesting. And then poof, it's over 1 billion, and it's become a worldwide phenomenon overnight.
Right.
Seemingly, right? But that's what network effects do. And people don't use, you know, people use the platform because everybody else is now on the platform. The platform has become exponentially more valuable as their user base has increased.
Absolutely. So you have the growth of these platforms that are unbridled, but more importantly, these large platforms, there's also something regarding innovation and the growth of innovation at scale that is happening. With, think about the growth of YouTube prior to the Google buyout, right? And
it was relatively slow. It was significant, but it wasn't what you saw in that post
no, you Googled. Absolutely. So there's so many new innovations in the YouTube market space because it's got Google as the backer, right? Correct. So the counter argument to the fracturing of these brands, these organizations, is literally what happens whenever an incubator like Google can get a hold of a company and purchase. There's still a commerce level. They're still buying. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even remember what the amount was for YouTube, but it was sizable. And everyone,
$1 billion, wasn't it?
That was nuts. And everyone, so you better believe the stockholders or the principals of the company benefited from what they built. So there's still, you got to look at it in this space as well, is that as much as competition is very important, the innovation for the consumer, the digital user, right? What the user is actually benefiting from that incubation, it's certainly a powerful incentive for businesses to combine efforts, right?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think if you look at the big four, so Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, over the last 20 years, they've purchased directly over 800 companies.
Wow.
That's huge,
that
right?
Is amazing. I mean, that's
right. And these are combinations of major acquisitions that we've all heard of, like the WhatsApp acquisition, the Instagram acquisition, the YouTube acquisition, but also hundreds of smaller ones. And many of these companies that were acquired previously acquired, mm-hmm. right? So you're talking about a total food chain in the thousands of companies. And that represents a ton of incentive for founders, but also a ton of capital that goes into the system, right? Like Absolutely. Venture companies love acquisitions. You know, if a venture fund's investing in you and you say, hey, this is a technology that could get acquired by Google and there's precedent for it,
yep,
that's a really nice exit scenario because the only other exit scenario was going public and that's really difficult to do or, now we have SPACs. But whatever, it's the same concept.
Right, right, absolutely.
So it's, to your point, it's fostering innovation, but then there's also the down market innovation that every one of these lawsuits really ignores. And if you go back to 2010, 2009, mm-hmm. and you look at the MarTech 5000, right? The biggest marketing technology companies on the planet.
Yep.
There were like 120 of them.
Yep.
Today, there's over 7,000 companies. So in the span of a decade, we've gone from, 120 something companies to over 7,000? That's like a compound annual growth rate of like 120%. That's a huge industry that employs tens of thousands of people and contributes millions and millions and millions of dollars economically just in the marketing technology piece. That doesn't count like the millions of people employed by Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google themselves. Mm-hmm. That doesn't count the millions more supported by those industries, directly and indirectly. So these are huge economic engines for the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you, as a sidebar, remember that MarTech infographic, and we had the developer of that on our show a while back, but I remember that graphic at one point in time being 120 companies, and they just couldn't keep up. Literally, you can't make that infographic anymore. It's just one big cluster of logos.
Yeah, it's
but
crazy.
It is crazy. So there's two sides of everything, obviously, but there are still key moral and ethical principles of doing business. And this is where antitrust lives. Even if it is an archaic set of laws, we still have to respect the principles of doing business. For example, Facebook. On December 9th, the FTC sued Facebook. This December 9th of last year, they sued Facebook for illegal monopolization. According to the FTC complaints, Facebook is the world's dominant personal social networking service and has a monopoly power in a market for personal social networking services. According to the FTC's complaint, Facebook targeted potential competitive threats to its dominance, one being Instagram. They tried to compete with Instagram on the merits of improving their own platform, their own offerings, but they chose to buy Instagram rather than compete with it. That seems to be capitalism right there. It doesn't seem to be any type of monopolization. They chose to buy the company. They acquired Instagram for $1 billion in April of 2012. And they neutralized their threat posed by Instagram, but also making it more difficult for another personal social network competitor to gain scale is the important factor there, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and the FTC complaint is basically like, we want a do-over. Because the thing that they really skirt around in like two sentences is, oh yeah, these things went, these deals went through FTC review.
Yeah.
Like, it's really important to remember that the FTC reviewed both the IG deal and the WhatsApp deal, and they signed off on both.
Absolutely.
And following those deals, Facebook did integrate the platforms. And yes, the integration is, anybody that works on Facebook knows that it's like not great. Mm-hmm. Let's be candid. But, you know, it's, it wasn't like, oh, we bought this company for $1 billion and now it's worth $100 billion. So that was bad. It's no, we bought this company for $1 billion and we invested tens of billions into it.
There it is. Yep.
Of Facebook's cash flow and shareholder money. And now it's worth a lot more. So yeah, I think they definitely bought it to neutralize a threat. I mean, that's clear. But my comeback to that is, you had a review. You had the chance to review this deal. You said it was kosher.
Right.
And now you're like, oh, waitsies, take-backsies. That doesn't work. Like, any kid that goes to elementary school that makes a card trade knows that you don't get take-backsies. Like, that doesn't
happen.
Is that
a legal term?
That is a legal term, yeah, actually. Yeah, I think it's Latin.
I've not gone to law school, but I need to look that up.
I have not either, but I'm just saying, like, you don't get to try again every time you fail.
No, like, you're absolutely right.
I think... And yes, to your point, there is the scale issue, right? But the scale issue, I think, is, we talked a little bit about TikTok before. If Facebook is so dominant, why is TikTok over a billion users?
Right.
Why is Snapchat's market cap quadrupled in the last year from $15 to almost $60 a share, right? These companies are not... You know, Facebook is obviously a very large, and it is the world's largest social media entity. But to say that no one can ever compete, I think, is wrong. And I think the emergence of TikTok really puts an exclamation point on that, because if you actually look at where Facebook is dominant, the platform itself is really skews a little bit older. But if you look at, for instance, what's the relevant market here? And that's a huge antitrust question. But in this case, it's like, well, most US teens don't use Facebook and they don't use Instagram. They use Snapchat and they use TikTok.
Right.
You know, and
so, I mean, to put a pause there for a second, is that the user behavior is constantly evolving, and the platforms are rushing to be able to find services to be able to feed that consumer driven desire, right? So TikTok and more visual platforms have exploded here over the course of the last 2 years. So there's no monopolization. And again, I'm no scholar in that space whatsoever, but monopolization has to also do with a finite amount of commerce as well. Commerce just blew out the side over there on TikTok. And I mean, and the teens went over there, and all us old fogies are still posting pictures of our dogs on Facebook, right? So it's about the diversity in the marketplace. It's also about the incubation of these platforms and what they can do and bring to scale innovation so more quickly. Now, in the Facebook side of things, they also levied the monopolistic tendencies of buying WhatsApp, which was the clear category leader in the messaging app space. And they and Facebook bought them in 2014 for $19 billion. But here's on the Facebook side, this is one that really was an issue. The third-party apps, and they're making the APIs that connect to Facebook available under certain conditions that other third-party developers don't develop competitive services with their API connections. So even that is a protective measure and could arguably be legitimate in other commerce places, but because it's Facebook, because it's so big, this just seems like a level of extortion, or I should say a level of manipulation, of removing the opportunity of competitiveness from those other third parties, right?
Yeah, I mean, in some cases, I mean, I think that's probably Facebook's weakest argument. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned the mergers themselves. You know, my position on those is basically, you bought them. Yep. You had the chance to review them. You could have said no. You didn't.
Yep.
Live with it. Yep. And if you want to regulate, then by all means, regulate. But that requires you to understand the business. That requires you to understand the tech stack. That requires you to really invest in crafting those regulations that will address the issues that you really want to reach. And I think that's key. The developer access and the predatory kind of conduct around the developer piece is potentially a vulnerability for Facebook, but it's one that's easily addressed with regulation, right? You know, you can't you have the same kind of issues in banking. It's just different access being granted and different ways to do it, right? Like a bank's not going to give another bank a loan to compete with themselves.
Right.
But you have ways to avoid this.
That's a good parallel. Yeah, absolutely.
And you have ways to regulate it.
Yep.
So we can do that. And we just need to invest in doing that. And I think the first part of that becomes, what are the issues that you actually want to solve for? And again, I think I mentioned this in the last episode, no one's really been clear about what exactly we're upset about. We're upset. We're very clear that we're upset. But when we start to dig into the problems, what exactly are we mad about? Are we mad about tech being mean to tech? Are we mad about tech being mean to WPP and big advertising agencies? Because I don't really give a shit.
It's just the game, about, guys.
Right, exactly. Like, are we mad about, you know, tech harming competition and innovation? Are we mad about tech being mean to their customers, like advertisers? Are we mad about tech being bad to people and privacy? Are we mad about bad people using tech?
Right, right, right.
And once you're clear about that issue, then I think you can start to think about some targeted interventions that will allow you to do this. Because the other part of this, and I think it's really important to understand, is you are basically trying to prove that one company did something that was against an 1890 or 1914 law and then design an intervention for it rather than solving the global problem. Like, you're trying to slap duct tape on a leaky cast iron pipe instead of just saying, hey guys, the pipe doesn't work anymore. Let's just put in a new pipe.
Just need to make the pipe out of flex tape. That's what you need to do right there.
Oh yeah. Like the, like that Flex Seal commercial. Absolutely. Where you can make a whole boat out of Flex Seal.
Exactly.
And screen.
Just make a new boat, make a new pipe. All right. So that actually pivots over to our last car on the train here, and that's Google and antitrust. And to be fair, this deserves its own show, honestly, this particular topic, but we'll cover a couple key suits that are happening here and wrap up. The issue is, when a company controls every part of the digital advertising pipeline and gives priority to its own services, there's a problem. Okay?
Yeah.
So that is a core concept into these legal battles. From the New York Times, quoting, if they're a pitcher, they're a batter, and the umpire all at the same time, then there's truly unfair practices that could be happening. So in October, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a landmark lawsuit alleging that Google unlawfully boxed out competitors by reaching deals with phone makers, including Apple and Samsung, to be the default search engine on their devices. A later lawsuit filed by nearly 40 attorney generals on December 17th of last year, literally 15 days ago, right? Alleges that tech giant search results favored its own services over those of more specialized rivals, a tactic that harmed competitors. So we got that. And then the complaint came a day after 10 other states led by Texas accused Google of engaging in false and deceptive and misleading acts while operating its buy and sell auction system for digital ads. So
They got problems.
Yeah, they do. And Google's been accused of hurting competitors by giving priority to its own search results. So they're literally, they're in the bidding war. They're in the ad war. And Google's own ads for their own products are coming up in front of competitors that are buying and vying for eyeballs and clicks on their own spaces. So that's the root. That's the key principle of this anti-competition, this monopolization, this antitrust issue. So what say you on that one?
So let's break this up, because there's a lot to do here. So let's do Texas first, and then we can talk a little bit about search. So Texas, I think, is probably the strongest argument total. And the Texas lawsuit is going after the ad tech stack. So what we're talking about is basically Google for Publishers, Ad Exchange, and then Google Ads that most digital marketers use as the buy side platform,
right?
And the Google 360 suite, right? And basically what that case is alleging in the broad strokes is that Google is operating each of these in a way to exclude competition and to self-preference.
Right.
And there is some significant documentation here about that. And they do have, and like I said, I think this is probably the strongest case they have that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the most detailed unpacking of the ad tech stack that's been done in a regulatory filing in the United States. So in some ways, that's actually good that regulators are taking the time to understand what's happening.
Absolutely.
Where I think things start to go off the rails in my mind is there is a ton of illusion throughout this entire 130 plus page filing about financial systems and instantaneous trading and real-time bidding. And you're basically trying to make this kind of connection between the financial system and the digital advertising system and say that if it's bad in the financial system, then it's bad in the digital advertising system. And in my mind, that doesn't follow because the financial system, we have regulations that say that's not okay. But in the digital advertising space, we don't.
Right.
Right? Like, yes, it uses some of the same infrastructure, but just because you use the same infrastructure doesn't mean that you are bound by the same principles and the same laws, because quite frankly, Congress had the opportunity to put those regulations in place and they did not. So yeah, there is definitely a problem with Google self-preferencing, and that's likely to be met with, at the very least, some significant regulatory intervention, which from a digital advertising standpoint should be welcome news.
Right. There's a sidecar to that particular topic as well. It's not part of the actual lawsuit, but it's also in public opinion. There's been reports of the demonetization of certain types of websites that were news websites that were more conservative leaning, that all of a sudden were not being able to benefit from the AdSense platform that they had actually previously engaged on. So there's a whole nother space, and we won't tap into that because that's going into.
Oh, goody. Because let's just. So I have no sympathy for news publications. I'm sorry, I have zero. You had a golden run. You paid overpaid salaries. You relied on an antiquated business model. You failed to adapt, and now the Darwinistic price is due, and you can't pay it. I don't feel bad for you. If you would have invested in the digital tools and tactics like so many other news publications have, you wouldn't be in this position where you're relying on a third party who is under no obligation to provide you with anything to support your bloated company.
There it is.
Sorry.
I wanted to give him a swing at that, and he took the skin off that ball. All right.
It's getting hot in here.
All right. So, but I wanted to do that because I knew you were going to go there. It's about their own system. So coming back around to it, the final kind of argument about this is Google's platform.
Yes.
If you're playing in Google's platform, they have full rights to be able to change their environment, right? Mm-hmm. And the same argument is done inside of SEOs. How dare Google change their algorithm? How dare they change how we rank? And I mean, everybody's hair goes on fire whenever there's a core algorithm change, but it's their freaking platform. Right?
Exactly.
At the end of the day, they're in control because they're trying to give the best content to the consumer. Sorry, I went on a rant there, but that's the thing.
I think so. I mean, there's a couple pieces to this, right? Mm-hmm. The first is Google changes the algorithm and they don't tell us what it is. That's their prerogative. Mm-hmm. It's their platform, like you said. And honestly, if you don't want to be reliant on their traffic, there are other ways for you to build a business outside of SEO.
Absolutely.
Plenty of companies have built very successful businesses with very low reliance on organic traffic.
Absolutely.
The fact is that it's an optional service and they're under no, and you're, everyone that you're competing with is in the same bucket, right? It's not like Google is saying, hey, you know, Site Strategics, here's the new ranking algorithm. Let's go talk about this in secret. Yeah. And, you know, we're not telling the other people about it. No, like everyone's in the same boat, which is the whole reason the SEO community commiserates around the core updates, because we're like, what happened?
We don't know. Everybody's uniformly screwed. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
It's nonpartisan.
But, I mean, exactly. There's nonpartisan screwing. That's good. But, you know, that's your first piece is, everyone's in the same boat. And if you don't want to be reliant on this, then build your business in a different way.
Exactly.
Don't cry when you're not given a gift anymore. It's like the trust fund kid that gets cut off. Don't cry.
Right, right.
You did it, right? Like it's not yours to begin with. It's theirs. The second piece I would say on this is the Google competing and Google offering similar vertical search.
Right.
So this is one where you get into a bundling conversation. And this is always a really uncomfortable conversation because let's start with acknowledging the hard truth. Mm-hmm. Most vertical search engines sucked.
Correct.
No one liked going to TripAdvisor. No one likes going to booking.com. No one likes Yelp.
No, right? Even Yelp doesn't like Yelp.
No one. Yelp doesn't even. Exactly. Like they're awful. But you want to cry about getting downranked, build a better platform. I mean, Google is very clear and explicit about what they want. Mm-hmm. I mean, they publish the quality raters guidelines, which are a really nice directional indication of where they want the algorithm to go.
Right.
You know, they offer plenty of tools, you know, ranging from the Search Console tools to, you know, Lighthouse, et cetera, for any webmaster or any owner to understand what they're looking for.
Yep.
And if you want to be like one of those platforms and litter your page with pop-up ads and bad user experience and bad results and shady stuff, don't be surprised when Google doesn't want to tie its reputation to you, which is what it does every time it ranks you high on page one. It's saying this is a credible site that's a credible result that is responsive to your query.
Right.
Well, they're not going to do that. They were like, well, you know what? You all suck. We're just going to do it better. And they did. Google reviews, does anybody really want to say Google reviews aren't better than Yelp reviews? I mean, maybe there's some diehard Yelp people that watch this show that are going to say, Sam, you're an idiot. But, I mean, I think Google reviews are better. There's no sign up required. I don't have to give them any information.
Yep.
They don't harass me. They just tell me what it is, right? Does anybody not use Google Flights? Like,
it's there.
I even planned, it's fantastic. They've built a better product. They looked at what was going to marketplace and they built a better product.
Right.
How is that any different from what Sears did on hardware? How is that any different from what Walmart does or Target does with their products, where they look and they say, all of you suck. We're just going to do this better. And what does that do?
Yep.
It pushes innovation, is my argument. It's the same thing Apple with a flashlight app. Apple built a flashlight app. There were 800 flashlight apps before Apple built a flashlight app.
Yep.
What happened? All those developers went and built other apps because now there's no money in flashlight apps. There's no money in exploiting a basic service.
Yep, I know.
We've had this argument over and over again throughout the U.S.'s kind of history. But like, if you go back to the 50s, cars didn't come with seatbelts or turn signals. Those were separate industries. Automakers were like, well, this is stupid. Let's bundle it together. And that's what happened over the late 50s, the 60s, and then finally the law in 1973 that required seatbelts that they fought tooth and nail. You know, we have the same thing in tech with Microsoft.
Yep.
You know, if you went to Excel, like when I was growing up, like everything was an add-in. You had to pay for everything.
Oh, gosh, that's
right. You
had
to pay for a web browser. You got those AOL CDs and those AOL floppy disks in the mail. And you had to actually like get a floppy disk to get a web browser.
Yep.
But then the platforms are kind of like, this is stupid.
So you're talking evolution, business evolution, right, of capitalism. I still wish I could buy those additional keyboard apps. I think I bought like four or five for my iPhone way back when, until they scooped up that particular.
Right. But I think that's the conversation is you're saying, well, what is core and what is ancillary and what is value add to the consumer? And I think in each of these cases, especially as Google's concerned, their products are beneficial to the consumer. They are not necessarily beneficial to the business. And I think some of their tactics in fueling them, like the Genius Lyrics thing, was like, I mean, if you're going to steal content, give credit. They were absolutely wrong in that. But if Google's going to say, hey, we're just going to become an answer engine, which is what they've said publicly in their filings for almost a decade now.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to fault them for it because they've telegraphed the move. And if you didn't see it coming and you don't evolve, then, well, Darwin comes for everybody.
So there's, in your mind, there's no space for if there's bad business or bad business ethics, that's a regulatory opportunity. Right. Right there.
That's problematic.
But when it comes down to the natural evolution of capitalism and business, you can't be pissed at a company that goes at scale. If they have the monetization to be able to do it, be able to acquire companies, guess what? Both companies benefited from that particular purchase. And that's always ignored. It just happens to, you know, roll with what they're trying to do and what they're trying to innovate with. So that's not a problem.
See this with Warren Buffett. Like, Warren Buffett is celebrated as an American hero. This man's bought like 70 something companies.
Yep.
You know, he bought like one of those candy companies he bought for pennies on the dollar, and it's a cash cow, right? But he bought utilities, he bought rail cars, he bought everything. And he saw an opportunity.
Yep.
He invested money. Like you said, both sides benefited in those transactions. And now he's got, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, which is a, you know, $100+ billion conglomerate that's you know, really the one of the most well-stewarded companies in America. But he built it the same way. It's just, you know, no one cares about chocolates and railroads. They care about apps and maps.
Apps and maps. There it is. Well, they obviously we're going to be watchers of this entire process going through. And there is, and I'm hearing from guests on a regular basis on the show, there's a plea to the government, the Senate, and the and representatives and regulators to actually understand this environment more and actually ask to build a consortium of subject matter experts to be able to consult. Because the last thing you want is these legislative and regulatory initiatives that are armed with, again, archaic tools. They don't understand the context of what has happened, and they don't understand the user's experience is also a prime interest at the table. It's not just the consumer. It's not just the businesses. It's not just the competition and the lack thereof discussions. The users are also going to suffer if you break apart these organizations and turn it into alphabet soup, right?
Right. I mean, you're going to have users potentially suffering, but you're also going to have businesses suffering.
Yep.
Like if a business can't get answers to questions, that's a problem. You know, Google is one of the largest sources for job applications, for instance, at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're dominant. That's a core fundamental operation or a core fundamental component of the economic operation of this country and of the world economy is the ability of talent to move back and forth. People can't find jobs that are open and employers can't find qualified people. That's a huge problem, right?
Absolutely.
You know, if people can't connect with one another, that's a problem in a digital economy. So I think you have to start, like you said, there's trade-offs, right? There's the privacy concern and how do we handle that? And what are the appropriate privacy measures that, you know, strike this balance between protecting users' information, but also not overburdening business with huge compliance costs? And simultaneously allowing innovation, because really regulation is a regressive tax. It is going to hit the smallest companies hardest. So, you know, you have to look at that and say, okay, well, how much innovation are we willing to stifle? What is the price that we're willing to put on privacy? How do we weigh an individual user's privacy versus a startup's trying to get those users and not necessarily being able to comply with really sophisticated privacy tactics and technologies?
Oh, that's a whole
other expensive.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation, right?
You know,
there.
How do we prioritize the needs of advertisers to understand where their investment is going and what they're getting for that investment with the needs of users to be protected when they search versus the need of competitors to be able to have access to that data? You know, there's all kinds of really interesting trade-offs here, and there's no easy answers. So I'm thrilled that Congress wants to get educated on this. But I think from a digital marketer's perspective, the biggest thing that's going to happen over the next year or two is nothing, because this is going to wind its way through the courts and it's going to be, you know, there's going to be some media headlines, but at the end of the day, is Google going to get broken up tomorrow? No. Right. Is Facebook going to get broken up tomorrow? No. Is anything really going to happen? Probably not. I mean,
a lot of lawyers are going to get paid. That's for darn sure.
Oh, yeah. A lot of law firms are going to get real rich. But, you know, other than that, I mean, I think my biggest concern is always the simple, easy and wrong answers.
Right.
I think we need to adjust that. We need to address this like we did the financial industry. That takes time. It takes practice. It takes incremental efforts that are both substantive in that they do rein in these problematic behaviors. And there are some. I'm not at all saying big tech is innocent. I don't want that to come across. But I just think they're being unfairly maligned because they're doing the things that everybody else has done for centuries. They're just doing it at a bigger scale. You know what I mean? I think, you know, when you talk about Amazon, is Amazon really a monopoly in e-commerce?
Or is it just the new evolution business?
Maybe, but Amazon's 40% of e-commerce, but they're 8% of total retail. So Walmart's 12%. Walmart's larger. You know, Costco is larger.
Yep.
So I think you have to start thinking about these things like, okay, well, I think the most helpful thing to think about from a marketer standpoint is, you know, number one, there are definite things that we could benefit from. I think, you know, regulations that provide transparency and accountability to these platforms, that they have to provide accurate data, is a good thing. You know, every other product, you buy a product, you get very clear. It's very clear what you got. I think that's the case here, right? I think simplifying the ad exchange would be good.
And give a level of transparency as well.
Yeah, adding a level of transparency and allowing more competition there is probably a good thing. But then I think you also have to look at it and say, okay, well, are these really separate markets? And that's one of the questions that is going to have to be answered. But I mean, my initial reaction is, you know, Google and Facebook compete for advertisers' dollars. I'm sure you see this with your clients. Yep. It's not a, you know, money goes from Google to Facebook and from Facebook to Google, depending on CPMs, depending on platform activity, depending on results, right? It's not like these are two separate things that they don't ever, you know, if Google all of a sudden spiked CPCs to look like LinkedIn, you would take the money off of Google and put it onto Facebook. Potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe. That's a whole other,
well, maybe.
That's a whole other, right? Can of worms there.
You know, it's not like you are, it's not an either or, and it's not like Google has the ability to infinitely price search results, because they don't, or search ad clicks. They don't have that ability. I mean, so I think you have to start asking, like, what's a relevant market? How do these markets interact? How do these market interactions impact advertisers and consumers, mm-hmm. and other businesses? And those are hard questions. So that's good that we're starting to have those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that we would not do it with a lawsuit, but sure.
Well, if anything, it starts the conversation. It starts the dialogue of evolution of business and evolution of these concepts. It certainly starts with these type of discussions as well. So we do appreciate how much time you've been able to give us today on these concepts. And I certainly hope that we can kind of come back around and bring you back in for another bit of observation as these lawsuits progress, as these dialogues open up further. I think it's good to be able to have a bit of a sidebar, so to speak, and unpack some of these things. So we appreciate your time today, Sam. We certainly want you to come back. What can we do to promote for you today? Give us a couple quick shout-outs of yourself, and where we can find you on social, and what else can we promote for you today?
I'm on social at DigitalSamIam.
Yep.
That's Twitter, LinkedIn. I don't really use Instagram. I don't really use any Facebook products, but I have them, so that's fun. That's that. If you're looking for marketing or advertising services and you're in the market, love for you to check out Warshawski.com. Always appreciate new clients. If you are looking for speakers, I have a personal website, samtomlinson.me. Mm-hmm. Please check it out. I'm actually looking to fill up my 2021 speaking events calendar. So if you or somebody you know of is looking for a speaker on, well, antitrust things are fun, but generally it's SEM, paid social, digital strategy, analytics, finance related topics are fun too.
Yep.
Happy to do that. So would love to have any conversations. It's always fun.
And yeah, absolutely. Like I said, and there's going to be, I mean, honestly, our conferences are not going to be going away. So there's going to be more and more virtuals. And we're seeing some really good payoffs of the evolution of these virtual conferences. Doesn't hold a candle up to some of these conferences of the past. And we certainly want to see them start back up. So hopefully in this year, maybe we'll come across your path in the real world as well, Sam. So thanks for
keeping.
Absolutely. And we'll have another steak dinner.
That sounds even better.
All right. Be safe, Sam, and be well. And we'll be talking to you soon. All right.
Awesome. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Edge of the Web Radio on YouTube. If you're really feeling up to it today, give us a quick review on iTunes as well. Let us know how we did on this interview and give us some feedback and give us your opinions about these topics, because we certainly want to hear from our audience. Thanks to our sponsor, Site Strategic, title sponsor of the show. Be sure to check out all the must-see videos and audio over edgeofthewebradio.com. Do not miss our digital news roundup that we have every Tuesday with Morty Oberstein as we go through the digital news of the week. So that's it for Edge of the Web Radio interview today. Check out the previous segment that we did with Sam in this from the show as well. Next show, we're going to be talking to Jason Bernard, but keep your eye on the dial as we push new content out of Edge of the Web as well. So from all of us over at Edge, stay safe, stay well, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next week.